On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin a brand spanking new broadcast week. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, as if you didn't know that. Well, maybe some don't. You never know. Well, you never know. Over the course of the weekend, I've had a conversation with a couple of folks on Twitter who had discovered us via their smartphones. And that is always exciting. A, because it's always great to know that the listener base is growing. But B, because that particular medium is the way of the future. That's where we're going to begin to achieve parity with the thuggish monopolization of the terrestrial airwaves, at least for so long as the corporate transnationals decide that we can use the bandwidth that way. You know, everything comes with a caveat these days, right? Well, that's one of them. Also, as we begin the program, I want to thank everybody who jumped out into the fore and helped us get all, well, very nearly to being only $250 short of meeting the halfway goal mark for the month. So we are still behind in fundraising. In fact, I got the Dear Bob, need to send a check real quick letter earlier today about our bandwidth bill, which is not insubstantial. But you know what? It'll get taken care of. But we are sliding along the razor's edge. And, you know, sometimes you just feel like that glistening pool of clear something that awaits you at the end of it is probably a big pool of alcohol. You know, off the razor blade into the alcohol. And what kind of fun can you have that with? Yeah, you know what I mean. So we are getting closer. We still need an abundance of members of the Thrifty 250 to kick in where possible, if possible. Please bear in mind. Please bear in mind that every little bit does help, and please bear in mind that I know that in this day and age, there's no such thing as a little bit. Every penny that comes in to support the Horn, I understand, comes at a tremendous sacrifice for everyone who does it. Just got an excellent note in from Ray. I caught your Friday program on your podcast. Any show that reads Langston Hughes and plays Phoebe Snow must survive in a world of Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga. So I'll drop $10 on the Horn. Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Who notes, from the increasingly insane state of Arizona. Yeah, as I asked, does anybody still have the receipt from the Gadsden purchase? Because I think we might want to return Arizona to the Mexico as being defective. Got to have the receipt, though, right? Yeah. But thank you. Thank you very much, Ray. Also had another wonderful email over the course of the weekend. You know, this stuff really does make it. It justifies what we do. I love hearing from you guys. I heard from Cliff, and you can always spot the first time writer, especially the ones that were, as we say here in the hills and hollers of Appalachia, raised right. Because they say Mr. Kincaid. No. Just Bob, please. But Cliff wrote and said, "Hello, Mr. Kincaid. I've been catching your show here in Ireland for a while. Thoroughly enjoy it." I heard a recast of what I assume was your Friday show, 15 April, and you were commenting on the Tennessee legislature's proclamation that Albert Einstein was a Christian. I was sipping my tea. You know, you'd be surprised how many pleasant little interludes I managed to ruin here and there. Dinners, tea, what have you. I was sipping my tea when I heard you refer to communion bread as Jesus meat and sprayed my Mac laptop. I was laughing very hard for quite a while. There's so much you can do with a title like Jesus Meat. Blogs, short films, even a musical. Thanks for the hearty belly laugh. And Cliff, do know that I am more than happy to provide them as possible. And frankly, I love the idea of Jesus Meat the musical. Somebody get to work on the libretto to that, would you? Our buddy Joe writes in, "Hey, Bob and crew. Today we're protesting against corporations that make billions and get tax refunds. I want to run two slogans by you. One, hey, Tea Party, this is what Boston was really about. And two, loophole lobbying is tax evading." You know what? Loophole lobbying has a real ring to it. It's right up there. Joe, could you work well chumped into this somewhere along the way? Because loophole lobbying is right up there with well chumped. We had a nice discussion with our op-ed columnist Reverbo on Friday evening about the people out there in Merca. Well chumped based on Fields, W.C. Fields' third commandment, don't smarten up a chump. And that's what we're dealing with here, an America that is largely well chumped by their loophole lobbyists. And regarding Friday's show, Fancy writes in, she says, "I love the following quote from Robert Heinlein. Men rarely, if ever, manage to dream up a god superior to themselves. Most gods have the manners and morals of a spoiled child." And really, that's quite true. It genuinely is. But you know what? This is the beginning of the week, and the beginning of the week, characteristically, is a special time. I mean, it's nothing like the narration to the beginning of the movie Dune. No. But they are special times. Because in the main, Monday is, well, Moran Monday. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your tickets, get your programs. This is the program that lets you tell the Morans from the rest of the world. And you can't tell them without one. Well, at least not unless they're carrying a poorly spelled sign or have various and sundry beverage packets hanging from the little strings around their head. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Behind the thin veil of cybernetic cloth, just behind me, you will see things that your eyes will not believe, moreover that your ears will not believe they are hearing. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Pregnant women and women with small children are advised to stay outside. For the Morans, they are a horrifying. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And we do have nominees this evening. Yeah, I'm referring to the David Lynch version of the movie Dune, Marty. I just couldn't get into the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries. Don't know why. Just couldn't. But anyway. It is Moran Monday. And what would at present at least, what would Moran Monday be without Donald Trump? And it's so funny because apparently the right-wingers are so terrified of him now that he is the Republican front-runner that the president of a conservative gang of anti-tax thugs called Club for Growth. I don't know if there's a hair club for men joke in there, or the idea that they're going to take their club and make sure that we don't have any growth, at least not spiritual, at least not ethical, at least not cultural. No, because they're going to beat all of that down until it can be drowned in a bathtub, you might recall. Anyway, the president of the Club for Growth is a guy named Chris, and when you hear his last name, you just know that his innermost circle of pals calls him Count. Chris Count Chocola, Vice President Frankenberry, Secretary Treasurer Booberry, the Quisp and Quake somewhere down the organizational flowchart, right? Yeah. No, Chris Count Chocola has declared that. Sit down, or you, like our buddy Cliff, will be spraying your monitor with your beverage of choice, or dropping your dinner in the floor or something. Chris Count Chocola has declared, in classic Moran fashion, that Donald Trump is just another liberal. Just another liberal. Just another liberal. Donald Trump, and by extension, that weasel on his head, sort of like the thing from Beyond Thunderdome. Donald Trump is just another liberal. Well, why is that? Donald Trump for president? You've got to be joking, said Chris Count Chocola, the president of the conservative anti-tax group Club for Growth. Donald Trump has advocated for massive tax increases that display a stunning lack of knowledge of how to create jobs. I'm not going to bother with it. Just take it as read that Chris Chocola, like Donald Trump, is a moron. But speaking of Donald Trump, I have something here that is just perfect for Moran Monday. I mean perfect. You know I and we here at the Horn have a taste for satire and parody. We've even produced a few of our own in the past. There's one in the works even now that may be pure magic when it's finished. And in the way of parody and satire, I commend to you the latest installment of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy, featuring your airship pilot, Reverbo, and his ongoing, shall we say, platonic-style dialogues with a mysterious Ross Perot who managed somehow just to materialize aboard the airship Silver Pelican. It's on the rotator at headonradionetwork.com. And I highly recommend you read it because it is well done satire in the classic vein. There is in reading this sort of thing, in reading what Reverbo has put up in this series, and more's coming. You can't help but be struck by a certain referent that feels sort of Hunter Thompson-ish, or maybe a little Joe Bajant-ish. In a way. It's smart, and it's funny, and it's engaging. And you should have seen the looks on the faces of the various and sundry bartenders aboard the MS Eurodam when, as I promised I would, I would periodically ask for a rum rockaroo, which is a beverage featured in A Cavalcade of Crazy, Looking for Work in A Cavalcade of Crazy, that I'm sure Reverbo won't mind if I tell you doesn't really exist. But, yeah, it was fun. It was fun. So go over and have a read. But having mentioned Donald Trump. I want to share something with you that I received from our good friend Dennis down in Kentucky. The name of the piece itself is by Ed Whittaker? I don't know. But it's called When Dummies Forget Why They Have Handlers. And apparently it is a parody site that uses real live, honest to God text, vocal, whatever, pronouncements from morons, the kind of folks you and I know as morons, and then puts them in the mouths of ventriloquist dummies. Now, granted, this actually has a video component to it, but it's about 6 minutes long. But the audio component is more than enough for it to be a standalone piece. When Dummies Forget Why They Have Handlers by Mock the Dummy One. And apparently there are lots of dummy videos. You will hear a dialogue between one ventriloquist dummy and another ventriloquist dummy. The second ventriloquist dummy has a really shaggy wig on and is in fact a dummy Donald Trump. Although frankly, if you set the dummy next to Donald Trump, figuring out which one was the dummy Donald Trump would be, a challenge, to say the least. But the words uttered by Donald Trump are largely words that were written by Donald Trump in a letter to the editor of, I believe, the New York Times. So without further ado, and knowing that we have a lot of folks who are grammar fixated as I am in the audience, without further ado, When Dummies Forget Why They Have Handlers, a special Moran Monday presentation, and you can find it for yourself over at Mock the Dummy. Just look up Mock the Dummy and enjoy at your leisure. But When Dummies Forget Why They Have Handlers.
Welcome to our tea party. Dummies wake up. Gail Collins, a liberal columnist with the New York Times, wrote a vicious article calling Donald Trump a birther. Now the dummy will respond.
Even before Gail Collins was with the New York Times, she has written nasty and derogatory articles about me.
She had written.
Huh?
Before she was, she had. It should be past tense, so the tenses match.
Says who?
The rules of grammar.
Yeah, well, f*** him and his family.
Okay.
Even before she was there, she has written nasty and derogatory things about me. Actually, I have a great respect for Ms. Collins in that she has survived so long with so little talent.
That was nasty and derogatory.
Her storytelling ability and word usage is not at a very high level.
Are not.
What?
They are not. Not they is not.
Hey, I don't need help from a dummy. I'm a really smart guy. This is coming from me, who has written many bestsellers.
Who has written?
Me has.
Okay.
In fact, I will put that in. Her storytelling ability and word usage coming from me, who has written many bestsellers, is not...
Wait. Her word usage is coming from you?
No.
But isn't that what you just said with your modifier?
You're the modifier, motherfucker! Her storytelling ability and word usage coming from me, who has written many bestsellers, is not at a very high level. More importantly, her facts are wrong.
Good. Strong finish.
As far as her comments on the so-called birther issue, I don't need Ms. Collins's advice. There is a very large segment of our society who believe that Barack Obama indeed was not born in the United States.
Believes.
Huh?
The segment believes. Segment is singular.
I said segment of our society.
That's still singular.
You're singular, you single, singular sensation.
If you believes it.
Indeed. His grandmother from Kenya stated on tape that he was born in Kenya, and she was there to watch the birth.
Indeed.
His family in Honolulu is fighting over which hospital in Hawaii he was born in. They just don't know.
She just doesn't know.
Huh?
Just one family member in Honolulu, his younger half-sister.
If she's the only one there, how is she fighting with the other family members?
Good point.
Get your facts straight, dummy. He has not been able to produce a birth certificate, but merely a totally unsigned certificate of live birth, which is totally different and of very little significance.
Totally twice?
Totally.
Okay.
Unlike a birth certificate, a certificate of live birth is very easy to obtain. Equally of importance.
Of equal importance.
There are no records in Hawaii that a Barack Hussein Obama was born there.
Other than the certificate of live birth.
Yeah, but no bills, no doctor's names, no nurse's names, no registrations, no payments, etc.
Except the newspaper notices.
As far as the two notices placed in newspapers, many things could have happened, but some feel the grandparents put an ad.
Ads?
Huh?
Two notices, multiple ads.
Put an ad in order to show.
Put an ad where?
Put an ad in order. Stop correcting me! I don't need your help. I'm a really smart guy. I was a really good student at the best school in the country, motherfucker!
Okay.
Some feel the grandparents put an ad in order to show that he was a citizen of the U.S. with all the benefits thereto.
Thereto?
Thereto! Everybody, after all, and especially then, wanted to be a United States citizen.
For the benefits thereto.
Indeed. The term used by Ms. Collins, birther, is very derogatory and is meant in a derogatory way.
And what should we call people who refuse to accept a certificate of live birth issued by the state of Hawaii as proof that a person was born in Hawaii?
Dummies!
Okay.
Had this been George Bush or almost any other president or presidential aspirant, they would never have been allowed to attain office.
He.
Huh?
Had this been George Bush, he would never have been allowed.
Or she?
He or she, not they.
Says who?
The rules of grammar.
Can you produce these rules of grammar?
Just go to Google and type grammar rules.
Aha! I asked for the rules of grammar, but all you can produce is grammar rules. Unlike the rules of grammar, grammar rules is totally different and of very little significance.
Isn't that just semantics?
You're the man chick, you freaking man chick! Had this been George Bush or almost any other president or presidential aspirant, they would never have been allowed to attain office or would have been thrown out of office very quickly.
How about or would have been immediately removed?
No! Thrown out of office very quickly.
Okay.
For some reason, the press protects President Obama beyond anything or anyone I have ever seen. What they don't realize is that if he was not born in the United States, they would have uncovered the greatest scam in the history of our country. In other words, they would become the hottest writer since Watergate, or beyond.
All right, stop. I know you don't want my help, and I know that you're a really smart guy who went to the best school in the country. And I know that it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for the son of a rich man to get accepted into Wharton. But that last sentence has to go. They can't become a writer. They can't become the hottest writer since Watergate because Watergate wasn't a writer. Hottest is a way to describe a Miss America contestant, not a journalist. And when you end a sentence with Watergate or beyond, you sound like Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story.
You're the freaking Toy Story, you freaking toy story? Open your eyes, Gail. There's at least a good chance that Barack Hussein Obama has made mincemeat out of our great and cherished Constitution.
It needs a stronger ending. How about instead of there's at least a good chance, you say, there's an 80% chance, I bet my fortune on it.
You're fired.
Release the GMAT score on the Wharton application.
You can tell Obama did the second book himself because it read like it was written by somebody of average intelligence with a high school education.
Not gonna go there.
Yeah, again, mockthedummy.com. That was just beautiful. There's just an element about that whole thing that it feels like it's in a way, it's talking about every teabagger ever born. The only thing is, Donald Trump, well, he puts the stupid out on the street, and he does it so ignorantly. Mock the dummy. Mock the dummy. Just look it up. There's lots of them there, and they're all big fun. big fun. So it is Moran Monday on the Horn, and I would be remiss if I didn't note that Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum seems to, well, I don't know, I've just got a feeling that he's going to find his way into the program periodically for the next little while. On Moran Mondays and non-Moran Mondays. How is Rick Santorum going to reach out to the American people and show that we're going to go forward bravely and boldly into the future by repealing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? This could easily get confusing. Igor Volsky of Think Progress caught up with Rick Santorum in Concord, New Hampshire, which, curiously, is not the Concord where the shot was fired that was heard around the world, or whatever it was, contrary to what Caribou Barbie thought. No, that wasn't Caribou Barbie. No, that was the new Queen of Stupid. That was Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman. Senator, on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I know you opposed the policy. Would you bring it back if you were president? Would you reinstate it? Yeah, I would. Jesus, he sounds like a... Sounds like something from a Ray Stevens song. He's standing over in the fruits and vegetables. This man has an obvious fixation on other people's sexuality that I would... Well, no, I don't want to get to the bottom of it. But it would... Anybody. Well, maybe this is just a little shout-out to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. Why is Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum so fascinated with how other people have sex? Just had a note in from our blogger, Texas Betsy. She says, I'm leaving in an hour and then largely offline for the next few days while I dress in Moses robes and divide the sea at a few satyrs. Cedars? Help me. She says, I'm bringing a duffel bag full of plagues even. You know, it's tough carrying those bags of frogs and locusts. I mean, it's all buzzy and jumpy and squirmy and... Probably got her a stick to throw on the ground, have turn into a snake. How is that? Satyrs. Okay. Satyrs. Thank you. Thank you, Betsy. I just need a little help now and then. That's all. Few choruses of Let My People Go. Happy Passover to everybody who celebrates it. I hope it's a very lovely holiday for you all. Me, any opportunity for horseradish, I'm down with it. Very nice, Betsy, very nice. My cane turns into a snake. See, she's got it all down. So happy Passover week to you all. This is one of those rare ones when Easter and Passover actually... Is it rare when they coincide? Yeah. So that's where we begin this evening. In a little bit, depending on circumstances, in a little bit, I want to go to a different video. This, or audio, actually. This somewhat longer than the Mock the Dummies thing, and considerably more serious. But you had the actual words of Donald Trump there in the Mock the Dummy piece. And we're going to contrast that idiocy in a sense of trying to create an overarching estimation of what it really means to be a moron. We're going to contrast the moranity of Donald Trump with the genius of someone like Chris Hedges. Because Chris had some things to say on April 15th that I think bear rebroadcast. He's been getting a lot of mention on this show lately, and that's mainly because what he says is so very true and so very trenchant, so very real, and so utterly, urgently in need of hearing. That if I can, we at the Horn can contribute a little bit in spreading that word, then I want us to be part of that solution as a way of combating the overarching problem. So we'll have that audio in a little bit. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Well, I nominated Santorum for one of my nominees for more, and yes. If you look at the show post, however, I specifically excluded those people who are Democrats especially, who are, shall we say, leaving Social Security on the table. I don't consider them morons. I consider them evil.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty. I did notice that story from The Hill today where Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, you know, DLC type, blue doggy sort of thing from Virginia, has declared...
Mark Warner has never had a poor moment in his life. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Well, but the point is, you know, he is ostensibly a Democrat, and the thing that occurred to me was when he said that Social Security is still on the table, that means that you and me, us, all of us, are still on the menu.
Yeah. Bojica.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's a fancy Cuban cigar.
No. Very, very few people do. However, on a good note, if you want to see something that will make you smile, although not with incredible hilarity like that dummy thing. Oh, God, talk about laugh. Go to YouTube and do a search for a flash mob.
At PowerShift?
PowerShift.
Yes.
Yeah. Where they proceed to take over BP stations.
Yeah, they shut down a BP station to protest what was done to the Gulf and to residents of the Gulf.
You know, and what I liked especially were all of these Scott cops standing there off to the side looking at each other saying, okay, now what do we do?
Well, you know, they were chanting and singing and throwing beach balls and carrying inflatable palm trees, and it's not exactly something you would characterize as overtly radical or violent, no.
Act or anything, no. You know, and it's mostly kids, and, you know, they're just standing there looking, okay, I can't really see tasering these dudes. That's going to really get us bad publicity, but now what are we supposed to do?
Right, and the fact that they were highlighting BP is important as well, Susan, because, among other things, I saw this headline from Agence France-Presse. Mystery illnesses plague Louisiana oil spill crews. It begins this way, Susan. Jamie Simon worked on a barge in the oily waters for 6 months following the BP spill last year, cooking for the cleanup workers, washing their clothes, and tidying up after them. 1 year later, the 32-year-old said she still suffers from a range of debilitating health problems, including racing heartbeat, vomiting, dizziness, ear infections, swollen throat, poor sight in one eye, and memory loss. She blames toxic elements in the crude oil and the dispersants sprayed to dissolve it after the BP leased, yada, yada, yada.
To me, that sounds like a central nervous system issue.
Yeah, it does. And of course, here's the backstory to it. I was exposed to those chemicals, which I questioned, and they told me it was just as safe, get this, Susan, safe as Dawn dishwashing liquid, and there was nothing for me to worry about. That's what the BP bosses at the job site told her. It's just like Dawn dishwashing detergent.
Well, that's like, just after they had the big quake in Japan, they were pulling people from all over the place to get on TV and talk about the U.S., how safe the U.S. nuclear plants were. And one of the talking heads they pulled in was Christy Todd Whitman. case anybody doesn't remember. She's the one who said, oh, the air's just fine to breathe over there at Ground Zero. You can work down there just fine.
Yeah. And we know how many human beings have paid the price for her filthy lie, don't we?
Oh, yeah. And we'll continue to do so. The one thing that just really gets me, not so much as, well, it gets me in the sense that I sit here thinking, these people are flat crazy. Guess who's leading the polls for the GOP?
Can't wait.
Donald Trump.
Oh, leading. I thought you said reading. Yeah, no, leading. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he's their number one guy. Oh, but wait. It's more and more fun. Guess who number two is?
Probably Bachman.
No. No, but worse. Mike Huckabee.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That would be a hell of a ticket, wouldn't it?
You could say it that way.
I think I need to investigate places overseas.
I tell you, it becomes a challenge.
I just don't understand these people, but I have come to one conclusion. That 20% that forms the Tea Party, don't ever expect to convert them. They're not going to ever be converted. Write them off. Just write them off. Ignore them. Go on with what you were doing politically or with whatever, you know, society, whatever. But that 20% just basically needs to be written off. These are people.
Yeah, those are the people that Reverbo has said on more than one occasion. You know, we've been idling the bus, waiting for them to get on board for a long time now, and sooner or later we close the doors and leave.
Yeah, they don't want to get on board. They don't want to learn. They won't learn. You cannot talk to them because they will not listen. They are wrapped up in their nice little fantasy world, and that's all they're interested in. Write them off. Just ignore them.
And, you know, it's you can't really talk about that kind of ignorance without talking about how they got that way. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I mentioned what Chris Hedges said a few days ago at the tax protest. Well, I'm going to mention him again, Susan. He's got there over at Truthdig an article, Why, and I would suggest that this is incredibly important for people to read, Why the United States is Destroying Its Education System.
Because people like that are easy to lead. It's simple. You just stampede them off the cliff.
True enough. But, you know, he says it in ways that are that just sort of smack you in the head.
You don't have to, you know, let's face it, nothing was worse for a politician than somebody who asks why.
And you know what? Most of our politicians are dim enough as it is that they don't want to be asked why anymore.
I was reliably informed by my parents that was one of the first questions out of my mouth was why, and I haven't stopped asking it since.
But listen to these words about listen to what Chris Hedges says here. He says, a nation that destroys its systems of education, degrades its public information, guts its public libraries, and turns its airwaves into vehicles for cheap, mindless amusement becomes deaf, dumb, and blind. It prizes test scores above critical thinking and literacy. It celebrates rote vocational training and the singular, and this is one of those to put on the wall, and the singular amoral skill of making money. It churns out stunted human products, lacking the capacity and vocabulary to challenge the assumptions and structures of the corporate state. It funnels them into a caste system of drones and systems managers. It transforms a democratic state into a feudal system of corporate masters and serfs.
Exactly.
I don't think it can get much more plain than that, do you?
Nope. And then we go right back to England, say about the year 1066, just before the Black Death hit.
And that would be the year that, lost the Battle of Hastings.
I know who won, but
was it Ethelred the Unready?
Ethelred the Unready, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, and then you basically have that type of society, and it goes on, it can go on forever almost, until something drastic happens. In the case of that society, the Black Death moved in and wiped out 3/4 of the population, thereby forcing a change. Why is it that it's always something along the lines of the Malthusian solution? It just tends to get really scary when you talk about things like that.
But the thing is, again, as Joe Bajant noted, everybody from Karl Marx to probably Ayn Rand went after Malthus. Because nobody wants to acknowledge that we have a really, really big problem that's worse than just about any other that anybody cares to mention.
Yeah, too many people.
Yeah. It's called carrying capacity.
Yeah. And I think the most profound part of the whole movie Avatar was at the very end, was the voiceover was saying the invaders were sent back to their dying planet. Guys, pay attention. Science fiction has a nasty habit of coming true.
Yeah, it does.
And we can kill this planet. We're well on the way to doing it.
Bears remembering, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now that I've done my nightly buzzkill, I'm going to go...
yes, I am.
What is the website for the dummies?
Mock the Dummy. Just Google Mock the Dummy.
I got to go watch that again.
And the title is, if you just want to Google the title, when Dummies Forget Why They Have Handlers.
That is hysterically funny.
Oh, wait till you get it with the video. See, one of these days we'll do it that way, and we'll put the video up, too, and it'll just be wonderful.
One thing. You mentioned a musical.
Yes, Jesus Meat, the musical.
Maybe we ought to see about getting the cast of Glee in.
Well, they've stopped. I can tell you that the Glee and Kings of Leon have stopped feuding. So maybe they've got time now. Oh, by the way, correction has come in from the factuality department. Ron and Raleigh said, "Hey, Bob, it was King Harold lost the Battle of Hastings."
Oh, Harold. Yeah.
Yeah, Hal, Harold, George, Henry, Frank, somebody. No, it was King Harold. Exactly.
Yeah, to William the Bastard. Not that it did William all that much good. He didn't. His dynasty didn't last much longer than his grandson, I don't think. It's kind of ironic. The one country that founded a world-spanning empire and then somehow or another managed to muddle through giving it up is almost to the 1,000-year mark.
Yeah. Now, I have a buddy who says he wants to live to be 100 years old. He was born in 1966. He wants to live to be 100 years old, and for the end of him, he wants to go to the 1,000-year celebration of in London. And he wants to stand in Trafalgar Square, face Berlin, and go...
It amazes me. That society has lasted for 1,000 years, almost.
Yeah.
We're going to be lucky to make 300.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And there's something about that society. You know, they've gone through civil wars. They've gone through the whole world wars, the whole nine yards. World empire, and then they gave it up. Or had it taken away from them, one or the other.
A little both.
Yeah. And they're still trundling along. That just blows me away. It just blows me away. And we think we are so cool because we've lasted for a couple hundred years. Well, whoop-dee-doo.
Indeed. Susan, you have yourself a great evening.
You too, and give my love to Agnes and the kids.
I certainly will. You take care. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. An email I just got from, again, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky. Somewhere, and I can't verify where, there is a business called the Waterfront Restaurant. And the quote that I received simply said, "The Waterfront Restaurant is pleased to announce that this tax year it has paid more in U.S. taxes than General Electric. We are absolutely delighted to be successful enough to be able to contribute to the United States defense and welfare and understand how, in these difficult times, a company like General Electric could be unable to contribute. So when you mail in that check today, think of those corporations that are less fortunate than you are. And how much they would like to help out, but just can't. The Waterfront, serving meals, employing locals, using the local bank, and paying our fair share for over 32 years. I would like to know where this restaurant is. I don't care if all they serve is soup and crackers. I would like to go and buy a bowl. But of course, that is the truth of this day, is it not? That phrase that Reverbo has coined, well chumped, maybe we should all have it tattooed on our foreheads so that we get to be reminded everywhere, all of us, me, you, because this is the day that we really get our noses rubbed in it, isn't it? This is the day that General Electric doesn't pay taxes. But we do. This is the day that BP gets multi-billion dollar rebates from the government, but we don't. This is the day when our betters sneer down their aquiline noses and in between bites of lark vomit canapé and hummingbird tongue lady fingers get a giggle at the proles. And you and I, we are them, the proles. you know, mentioning Susan mentioning the fact that the right wing wants to create serfs, and what Chris Hedges wrote about a dumbed down education system creating serfs. I got a note in from David in Tennessee. I do believe, says David in Tennessee, the Tennessee curmudgeon, he said, referring to himself in the third person, said some time ago that the ugly right wanted serfdom and would do anything to have it. Yeah, we know that, don't we? All the way down to our toenails, we know that we are the ones who are, in fact, well chumped. For there will be no non-tax liability for the working class. We will pay. GE will not. And what with it being Moran Monday and everything, I would be remiss if I did not note that Herman Cain, has offered, you know, he's the power behind and CEO of Godfather, former CEO of Godfather's Pizza. He became a millionaire or a billionaire, one slice of pepperoni at a time. Well, he was asked a question recently at a Tax Day Tea Party rally in Orlando, Florida. He was asked that question by Scott Keyes of Think Progress. Bless their little hearts, they get all of this stuff. They get all of this stuff down for posterity. So that people can say, I am liberals, they're just making it up. Now, this guy's a darling. This guy's a darling. Herman Cain is. And I want you to hear, being as how it is, in fact, Moran Monday, I want you to hear how he justifies the fact that most of us are paying till it hurts today, while GE is paying nada.
You mentioned about the you know, here on tax day with the corporate tax rate,
right,
that you'd like to see it reduced from 35% to 25%.
Yep.
But a lot
these things happen.
Of these corporations like GE are paying nothing in taxes currently. Do you think
you're mixing the issues, young man? Let me tell you something. People who pick out a company that's paying zero, they're not looking at the big picture. They're not looking at the big picture.
Second, but do you think that's okay?
Let me finish. Secondly,
well, first of all, we know that young Mr. Keyes is not looking at the big picture. Because if you're looking at the big picture, you can't see those. In the big picture, it's kind of like when the hippy dippy painter paints a painting. Bless his heart, he's dead now, but he'd be sitting there painting a painting on PBS and say, "And right over here, we're going to put a rock, and maybe back behind that rock, there's a squirrel, and that squirrel's looking at us, and he's saying, 'Crazy people, crazy people.'" Well, in the big picture, GE's back behind a rock. So, you know, we're missing the big picture. But let's hear Herman Cain's second point. Herman. Now, dang it.
Secondly, taxes paid by corporations get passed on to consumers.
So would you like to see no taxes then on corporations?
I would like to see no taxes on corporations. That's why I favor the fair tax. That would be fair to consumers. That's why I would like to see that.
Do you think it's fair, though, that they're taking advantage of these loopholes?
Now, let me tell you. They didn't write these loopholes. So the fact that they are using these loopholes, as you're calling it, they are just doing what the loopholes are.
Would you
change the loopholes by eliminating the tax code and replacing it with the fair tax, and there would be no loopholes.
So, as President, get rid of them.
Get rid of the loopholes by getting rid of the tax code. You see, people who want to try and talk about piecemealing a solution to taxes is the wrong approach. Eliminate the whole tax code and then replace it with the fair tax. You eliminate the loophole. You eliminate people complaining about corporations not paying taxes. And you eliminate taxes being passed on to consumers.
Oh, my little head is hurting. Corporations didn't write these loopholes. Huh? Well, technically, they didn't. I mean, GE didn't write the loopholes. GE hired a small army of lobbyist lawyers to write the loopholes and bought themselves a few Congress critters and senators to pass the loopholes. So I guess you could almost say that Herman Cain's statement is factual. But they're just using the loopholes. I mean, the loopholes are there. Loopholes would get dang lonely if they weren't getting used. There's nothing sorrier nor sadder than a lonely loophole. I have to tell you, it's heart-rending. And that old, old chestnut. That old chestnut that we shouldn't tax corporations because corporations pass on their taxation to consumers. Well, you know, it is possible to design a system in which they're not allowed to do that. I'm not necessarily saying that it would be a good system, but it is possible to craft a system in which you could prevent them from doing that. But God Almighty! If I'm a baker, I pass along the cost of the wheat and the water and the labor in the form of the price that I seek for my loaves of bread. That's not capitalism. That's just trying to preserve the ability of the bread baker to keep baking bread. I mean, there were bakers in Soviet Russia, right? Yeah, I thought so. I mean, we were baking bread back before 1776 when Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations, weren't we? I mean, bread kind of has a long history. Yeah. But beyond that, there's another question. And that is whether or not the immoral transnational corporation is the best answer to the problems that face humanity. Because more and more, my thinking develops along the lines of we're seeking the wrong answers because we're asking the wrong questions. Because the problems themselves are becoming dire. You know, Susan mentioned Malthus a few minutes ago. There are real problems associated with, among other things, too many members of the herd on the planet. There are more people alive now than were ever alive in the combined entire history of the planet before now. That's a sobering thought. And a vast number of them live in abject misery. And the question is, how do we deal with that? Do we just look away from it? Oh, don't look at the little starving child. You'll only feel bad. There's nothing you can do about it. That child just has to starve. Or do you try to promote a world in which we try to see that there aren't any more starving children? Well, on the one hand, we know this much. If you raise people up out of desperation and out of poverty, they are less likely to overpopulate. truly. Because people who live on the very saddest margins of humanity, they don't have food. They don't have clean drinking water. God knows they don't have a box of condoms sitting beside the palm fronds that they call bed. You see? And the one little respite from the agony of what is a miserable existence comes in the comfort of the love of another. And then you get more babies. You know, it's like the long-standing Roman Catholic Church position on condoms. There's a reason the church doesn't want birth control. They've got to make sure that the poor and the ignorant continue to breed up more poor and ignorant to buy into their hokum. As our chat room moderator Lottie has noted so many times, the vast majority of the members of the church worldwide practice their Catholicism with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. Hint, the chicken ain't for dinner. It's for divination. So we will drive ourselves to distraction with justifiable anger at the fact that that this was a party day for GE, while it was a day of grim apprehension for the rest of us. And it's, frustrating as hell. But again, it may be the wrong question altogether. And we may be altogether ass backward. We may be rearranging deck chairs while the ship gets ready to go bow down. I think you get the idea. So we'll come back with the second hour of the program after a little break. And we'll go back to this audio of Chris Hedges. I think it's going to prove to be stimulating. Conversation stimulating. Thanks to those of you, by the way, who have in the first hour of the program chipped in. One individual has kindly filled up 5 slots in the Thrifty 250. A couple of more have been filled in as well. It is much appreciated. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email comes in quite reliably to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
When I'm talking to you, you think you ought to do, baby. won't go back talk. If you don't like what I'm doing, baby, pick up your single walk. You gotta be crazy, baby. You gotta be out of your mind. As long as I stand up here,
thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Hey guys, I know I don't say this enough, but I'm going to say it now. When push comes to shove, you guys are always there for me. You really hung in there, and you've always been so close to me. So don't take this the wrong way, but I got you something. I love you guys.
Aw, we love you too.
I love you guys. Powder for your nads. By Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
As we go through this conversation this evening, on this day when we are the butt of the biggest joke in the country, the corporate tax dodge. You're just sitting there and then, look at them, suckers! Oh, don't smarten up the chumps! Right. I do. I hate talking about fundraising and stuff like that. I literally despise it, and I wouldn't do it if we didn't have to. But I gotta tell you, I don't feel so bad about it sometimes when I see things like I saw yesterday from one outfit who sent me an email saying, all we need right now is $60,000 by tomorrow. all I see... $60,000 by tomorrow. And suddenly I don't feel like quite such a jackass for trying to raise operating costs to keep all this going. So, I mean, there is a difference. There really is. And, you know, we're talking about the difference between raising $80 a night versus I'm not even able to do that math. Couple of things in the email. Also a reminder, you know, you heard the Bubble Genius ad there. There is a special offer out there for Horn listeners. If you prefer to scrub your hide and not be corporate about it, you know, and not support the people who don't pay taxes or who don't pay as much in taxes as you do, there's a great way to do it, and that's Bubble Genius. And it's a lot of fun, too. And if you order from them and you put in the promo code box HORNIE, H-O-R-N-I-E, you will immediately receive 10% off your order, and you will receive a free bar of Horn soap. Take the Horn to the shower with you. Just don't send me pictures. So, Bubble Genius. Bubble Genius, HORNIE in the promo code box, and you get 10% off and free soap. So, there's that. Now, moving onward, Ron in Raleigh dropped a note along, and he said, like the for-profit media, corporate tax departments have become profit centers. They do not exist to determine how much they need to pay. Instead, they are there to figure how to evade, not avoid, evade, paying their fair share for the portions of the commons that they use. And Ron is, of course, absolutely right. And they use vastly more of the commons than you or I will ever even be able to contemplate. And by the way, the tax code, those loopholes that Herman Cain was talking about, Jim notes that there have been 547 changes to the tax code since just last year. Most of those changes to the tax code weren't for you. Okay? Are we square on that? They were not for your benefit. They were for GE's or BP's or Godfather's Pizza, what have you. You know, in his new article over at headonradionetwork.com, Reverbo quotes the late, great George Carlin, "You ain't in the club." And nor am I. And because we're not, we don't get rules written for us unless they are rules to make it harder for us. I mean, that's just how it is, isn't it? So by way of creating a little bit of contrast space between what it sounds like and what it is to be a moron versus what it sounds like to be intelligent and informed and therefore incredibly angry and frustrated, this is about 11 minutes of Chris Hedges speaking at Union Square in New York City on April the 15th, this past Friday. Like I said, what Chris Hedges is saying these days is so important that I want to be a part, and I hope you will be a part, of trying to spread what he is saying. The trick is to get it outside our own echo chamber. But from April the 15th, Union Square, New York City, Chris Hedges.
Great music with something to say. We stand today before the gates of one of our temples of finance, where greed and profit are the highest good. where self-worth is determined by the ability to amass wealth and power at the expense of others, where laws are manipulated, rewritten, and broken, where the endless treadmill of consumption defines human progress, where fraud and crimes are the tools of business. The two most destructive forces of human nature, greed and envy, drive the financiers, the bankers, the corporate mandarins, and the leaders of our two major political parties, all of whom profit from this system. They place themselves at the centers of creation. They disdain or ignore the cries of those below them. They take from us our rights, our dignity, and thwart our capacity for resistance. They seek to make us prisoners in our own land. They view human beings and the natural world as mere commodities to exploit until exhaustion or collapse. Human suffering, imperial wars, climate change, poverty, it is all the price of business. Nothing to them is sacred. The Lord of profit is the Lord of death. The Pharisees of high finance, who can see us this morning from their cubicles and corner offices, mock virtue. Life for them is solely about self-gain. The suffering of the poor is not their concern. The 6 million families thrown out of their homes are not their concern. The tens of millions of pensioners whose retirement savings were wiped out because of their fraud and dishonesty are not their concern. The failure to halt carbon emissions is not their concern. Justice is not their concern. Truth is not their concern. A hungry child is not their concern. Fyodor Dostoevsky in Crime and Punishment understood the radical evil behind the human yearning not to be ordinary, but to be extraordinary. The desire that allows men and women to serve systems of self-glorification and naked greed. Raskolnikov in the novel believes, like those in this temple, that humankind can be divided into two groups. The first is composed of ordinary people. These ordinary people are meek and submissive. They do little more than reproduce other human beings in their own likeness, grow old, and die. And Raskolnikov is dismissive of these lesser forms of human life. The second group, he believes, is extraordinary. These are, according to Raskolnikov, the Napoleons of the world, those who flaunt law and custom, those who shred conventions and traditions to create a finer, more glorious future. Raskolnikov argues that although we live in the world, we can free ourselves from the consequences of living with others, consequences that will not always be in our favor. The Raskolnikovs of the world place unbridled and total faith in the human intellect. They disdain the attributes of compassion, empathy, beauty, justice, and truth. And this demented vision of human existence leads Raskolnikov to murder a pawnbroker and steal her money. The priests in these corporate temples in the name of profit kill with even more ruthlessness, finesse, and cunning than Raskolnikov. Corporations let 50,000 people die last year in this country because they could not pay for medical care. They have killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghanis, Palestinians and Pakistanis, and gleefully watched as the stock price of weapons contractors quadrupled. They have turned cancer into an epidemic in the coal fields of West Virginia, where families breathe polluted air, drink poisoned water, and watch the Appalachian Mountains blasted into a desolate wasteland while coal companies make billions. And after looting the U.S. Treasury, these corporations demand, in the name of austerity, that we abolish food programs for children, heating assistance, and medical care for our elderly, and public education. They demand that we tolerate a permanent underclass that will leave one in six workers without work, that condemns tens of millions of Americans to subsistence living and tosses our mentally ill on the heating grates. Those without power, those who these corporations deem to be ordinary, are cast aside like human refuse. It is what the god of the market demands. When Dante entered the city of woes in the Inferno, he heard the cries of those whose lives earned neither honor nor bad fame, those rejected by heaven and hell, those who dedicated their lives solely to the pursuit of happiness. These are all the good people, the ones who never made a fuss, who filled their lives with vain and empty pursuits, harmless perhaps, to amuse themselves, who never took a stand for anything, never risked anything, who went along. They never looked hard at their lives, never felt the need, never wanted to look. Those who chase the glittering rainbows of the consumer society, who buy into the perverted ideology of the consumer culture, become, as Dante knew, moral cowards. They are indoctrinated by corporate systems of information and remain passive as our legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government, tools of the corporate state, strip us of the capacity to resist. Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative, it makes no difference now. Barack Obama serves corporate interests as assiduously as did George W. Bush. And to place our faith in any party or established institution as a mechanism for reform is to be entranced by the celluloid shadows on the wall of Plato's cave. We must defy the cant of consumer culture and recover the primacy in our lives of mercy and justice. And this requires courage, not just physical courage, but the harder moral courage of listening to our conscience. If we are to save our country and finally our planet, we must turn from exalting the self to subsuming the self for our neighbor. Self-sacrifice defies the sickness of corporate ideology. Self-sacrifice mocks opportunities for advancement, money, and power. Self-sacrifice smashes the idols of greed and envy. It demands that we rise up against the abuse, injury, and injustice forced upon us by the mandarins of corporate power. There is a profound truth embodied in the biblical admonition, "He who loves his life will lose it." Life is not only about us, and we can never have justice until our neighbor has justice. We can never recover our freedom until we are willing to sacrifice our comfort for open rebellion. The president has failed us. The Congress has failed us. The courts have failed us. The press has failed us. The universities have failed us. Our process of electoral democracy has failed us. There are no structures or institutions left that have not been contaminated or destroyed by corporations, and this means that it is now up to us. Civil disobedience, which will entail hardship and suffering, which will be long and difficult, which at its core means self-sacrifice, is the only mechanism left. The bankers and hedge fund managers
the corporate and governmental elites are the modern version of the misguided Israelites who prostrated themselves before the golden calf. The sparkle of wealth glitters before them, spurring them faster and faster on the treadmill towards destruction, and they seek to make us worship at their altar. As long as greed inspires us, greed keeps us complicit and silent. But once we defy the religion of unfettered capitalism, once we demand a society that serves the needs of citizens and protects the ecosystem rather than serving the needs of the marketplace, once we learn to speak with a new humility and live with a new simplicity, once we love our neighbor as ourself, we will break our chains and we will make hope visible. Thank you.
Great speech. And I mean that with all sincerity. A great speech. And it contains in it the seeds of perhaps where we need to get ourselves as quickly as possible. But it is stunning what Hedges says. What grabbed me, everything grabbed me. But what grabbed me the most, okay, I admit my pink little ears perked up when I heard him reference what's happening in West Virginia. He knows. He got shown firsthand. And he knows the cost that is being borne by Appalachian people and by anybody anywhere near any surface mining operation. He knows the costs that are being borne by people on the Gulf of Mexico to support the billions of dollars that go to buy $15,000 shower curtains and the like for the Masters of the Universe at BP. He knows. But by the same token, knowing is not enough. And that's why the other thing that just jumped out and grabbed me was the litany of the failure of our institutions upon which we, I suppose, still maintain a fantasy that our republic is grounded upon. Everything, as I said several years ago in some rant one evening, everything is broken. You know, over the weekend, a horrifying spate of tornadoes blasted through from Oklahoma and Arkansas into the southern United States, left 44 people dead, and God knows how many homes ruined. And though growing up down there, I never experienced having my home blown away, I have stood in that rubble where others have lost everything. And the sense of loss is beyond what most of us can comprehend. There are those still alive here in West Virginia who raced to a little place called Buffalo Creek in 1972 in February, where an entire community had been erased from the face of the earth, along with in excess of 100 people. Some never found. And those people to this day can't get it out of their minds. And yet we live in an artificial world that is designed to keep us from seeing the flotsam, the detritus of our ruin. Case in point. This is the day when our masters celebrate our well-chumped status. Well, okay. But it's also a day when I received two emails from a PR flack. Extra! Kate Hudson's pregnancy brain like being stoned. Expectant mother Kate Hudson spoke to Extra's Renee Varg about her latest film, Something Borrowed, and about how her pregnancy is going. Being pregnant is wonderful. You do get the pregnant mush brain, you know, but it's like getting stoned. Where's the delete button? There's the delete button. And then Aaron sent me another one a matter of minutes later. Extra! Please feel free to use the story below with credit to Extra and a link to extratv.com. For more with Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson, tune in to Extra tonight. Braving the screaming mobs, Extra caught up with stars Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson at the New York City premiere of their romantic drama, Water for Elephants. Who put the water in my water? No, Water for Elephants, where we asked Reese how it was filming their love scenes.
Sexy doesn't cover it, the actress laughed. I don't know how we got this rating. That's all I'm going to say.
And this is the pitiful tissue paper thin veneer through which we are not supposed to see the wreckage of an entire society. Again, as long as the cable stays on, most of America will consider itself to be just fine, thank you very much. As long as the cable's on, nobody's hungry, even if they are. As long as the cable's on and we can mystically transport ourselves into some fantasy of what it must be like to be inside Reese Witherspoon's head, or, you know, sort of like being John Malkovich, or to be just as drop-dead sexy as Robert Pattinson. Jeebus! You know? What's the old saying? The condemned ate heartily? Just a couple of nights ago, Agnes and I were getting ready to go to sleep in the bedroom. No, really. That we've got matching twin beds, just like Ricky and Lucy, you know. No, we don't. And so I'm surfing. And what do I see? Why, it's a History Channel special on the Shroud of Turin. On the History Channel. In which they offered the Shroud of Turin as, it's real blood on there. And that image, well, that's Jeebus. And I was pretty near fit to be tied. I know I've had hissies about the History Channel in the past, and frankly, even me paying attention to it may be betraying myself as every bit as shallow as anybody else that I've ever criticized directly or indirectly for whatever fascinates us on the magic box, the household altar, if you will. But it fits rather tidily into Chris Hedges' thesis that whether we recognize it or not, we are standing in ruins. You know, after the Crusaders had pillaged and plundered Constantinople, in 75 years' time, an entire generation had risen up who never knew a Constantinople that looked anything else than what they saw around them. The effort to remember is much more difficult than the non-effort to forget. And we have become very, very good at forgetting. We forget our present, we forget our past. And to the extent that we even consider a future, well, it's one where somehow or another, some deus ex machina will swing out with the god hanging from it, from off stage, and fix stuff. Oh, don't worry about global warming, global climate catastrophe. Science will fix that. Don't worry about an exploding population on the planet. You know, the problem is not that we got an exploding population, it's just that we're not managing the planet right. But why aren't we managing the planet right? Because everything is broken. It is. And ultimately it becomes a question of how to fix it. I admit, I think that Chris Hedges has a bit of a nihilist streak, but I think he can be forgiven for it. It's kind of hard to crank out a very believable rendition of Tomorrow from Annie when you know really what today looks like. And in many ways, it begins to appear that another Anne Frank, was perhaps too much an optimist. And like anybody in any 12-step program will tell you, if you focus on the big picture in a crisis like this, you will be defeated by it. You can only focus on that which you can change, that which you can fix. And there's plenty that we can fix. You can't just tear everything down at once and hope for the best on the rebuild. You know, here's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to work where I am, how I am, to the best of my abilities, to try to stop the wholesale destruction, poisoning, and miserable slide toward grim death that is the patrimony of living in Appalachia. If we can get that stopped, then maybe just doing what little I can do and my friends and neighbors and colleagues, maybe we can stop some of the 26,000 people outside Appalachia and inside Appalachia who simply die because we burn coal every year. And I'll do it by every means available to me, short of violence. I will never, ever advocate violence, because it doesn't succeed. It is a failure. of you in your way. You know, maybe, maybe you live somewhere that you can advocate against a massive disaster waiting to happen at a nuclear plant. In northeast Alabama, TVA has one called Bellefonte that is a nightmare waiting to happen. Guess what TVA wants to do? They think they can fix it and get it back online. So that someday, Fukushima can happen in, Jackson County, Alabama, or Lauderdale County, Alabama, or maybe Limestone County. Or maybe it can happen in California. Do what you can do. Don't be devastated by the fact that you're standing in the rack and ruin. Of the devastation around you. The only way people who have been hit by a tornado ever begin to clean up is by picking up the first board and by picking up the first piece of rubble. That's all we as humans have ever been able to do. Clear the rubble, start over. Marty telling me never say never about violence. You never know when you might have to break that. No, I will defend my home. And if deadly force is necessary for that, so be it. But to advocate that someone take up arms, when all in the world that means is that you will be crushed all the harder, nope, won't do it. I cannot find a period in history where the use of violence has done anything but breed more violence. The man responsible for the plunder of Carthage stood looking at the ruined city and had a vision in that moment that the violence he had just done to Carthage would someday be brought home, perhaps ages hence, to Rome. And he was right. And it was. For all the inability of people to think that it ever might not. All the mighty works raised by Justinian or by the pharaohs. Well, that's encapsulated in the poem Ozymandias. Look upon me and despair. The blocks of ancient Rome's buildings were used to construct new buildings, residences for popes and cardinals, without regard for any value of the past. It was just medieval recycling, wasn't it? So there you go. Now, I got to tell you, I think, bless his heart, I think when Chris Hedges starts making references to Fyodor Dostoevsky and Dante, that really cuts into his ability to ever reach Emery and Eileen. Because it doesn't hold any relevance. But hell, I'm guilty of that. The thing is, I'm lucky enough to have an audience that actually does have a working knowledge of these things and makes it useful. But when trying to take these facts out to a broader world, you got to leave Dostoevsky at home. Mark Twain, maybe you can take Mark Twain on the road. Dostoevsky has to stay home. Probably Dante does too. The Bible? Yep, lots of biblical references in Hedges' speech. And that'll travel. That'll travel. But the fact of the matter is, on this, the 18th day of April, 2011, we are being peeled like a grape, you and I. All of us. We are being peeled like a grape for the benefit of 1% of the population of this country. 1% that people like Herman Cain get down and abase themselves and bow and scrape to in a sort of sad, sickening, putrid act of fealty. And in turn, members down-rung bow and scrape and wallow and roll on their backs and wait for their bellies to be scratched by the Herman Cains. You know what? We just need to... You know what? We don't need no corporate taxes. We just need to eliminate them because they just pass the taxes on. They just pass the costs on to us. But the funny thing is, and this is the one that they can never really refute, the times of the greatest prosperity in this country are the times when corporations and the wealthy have paid the highest marginal tax rates. You know, Paul Krugman dissected the Heritage Foundation in a recent column. And he said, the fact of the matter is, any time that the Republicans want to argue that tax cuts create jobs, the Heritage Foundation is right there to put forward some phony baloney economic chicanery to advance the argument. He says, by the way, Heritage is always like this. Whenever there's something the GOP doesn't like, say, environmental protection, the Heritage Foundation can be counted on to produce a report based on no economic model anyone else recognizes, claiming that this policy would cause huge job losses. Correspondingly, whenever there's something Republicans want, like tax cuts for the wealthy or for corporations, Heritage can be counted on to claim that this policy would yield immense economic benefits. He continues, the point is that the two parties don't just live in different moral universes, they also live in different intellectual universes, with Republicans in particular having a stable of supposed experts who reliably endorse whatever they propose. And that's the truth of the matter. If corporate America and the Republican Party wanted to convince people that, oh, I don't know, eating mercury is good for you. Wait a minute, they've already done that. That drinking cyanide provides health benefits. There's somebody sitting at the Heritage Foundation who can crank out a study almost overnight, and in no time flat, the for-profit media will be trumpeting it from the rooftops. Consider a case in point, and this isn't exactly... Well, this isn't the Heritage Foundation, but it's certainly the media thing. You may have seen a story that came out, Friday? Almost half of the meat and poultry, this is how CNN reports it. I'm using CNN for a reason. Almost half of the meat and poultry sold at U.S. supermarkets and grocery stores contains a type of bacteria that is potentially harmful to humans, a new study estimates. Researchers tested 136 packages of chicken, turkey, pork, and ground beef purchased at... See, this is another one of those... Hey, Bob, you sure you don't want to be a vegetarian? Well, you know, there's poop on the lettuce, too. Researchers tested 136 packages of chicken, turkey, pork, and ground beef purchased at 26 grocery stores in 5 cities around the country and found that 47% contained Staphylococcus aureus, a common cause of infection in people. Oh look, Marvelline. I guess we better spray that T-bone with some Bactine. Well, that's the problem. Spraying it with Bactine or anything else won't do much of anything. Because, as it turns out, roughly half of the contaminated samples contain strains of the bacteria, Staphylococcus aureus, that were resistant to at least 3 antibiotics like penicillin, tetracycline, so forth. Some of the strains were resistant to a half a dozen or more. And so, God knows, I haven't seen the, anybody want to find it and send it along? The press release from the American Beef Association. Dum 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 dum. Staphylococcus, it's what's for dinner. Shut up and eat your hamburger, Prol. Yeah. Cold hamburger. And that's what's in the grocery stores. This isn't a study of crappy grocery stores in bad neighborhoods. This is grocery stores, you know, where all sorts of folks shop. Maybe even where the Tony people, you know, buy their beef. And it's got staph in it, too. Why? Well, you know, it's that lines between dots thing. There was a time when we had a whole lot more USDA inspectors than we do now. And even then, we didn't have enough. And these problems were not nearly as pervasive. But outfits like the Heritage Foundation have made arguments that regulation kills jobs. And the free market can't operate freely, and the unseen hand has gloves on when you got regulations out there. What's a little medication-resistant Staphylococcus aureus among friends anyway? MRSA. MRSA. We're talking about MRSA. All you need to do is make sure you cook the beef to 180 degrees Fahrenheit, and you won't have no bacteria in your beef. It's what's for dinner. But what happens? What happens if you've got a little micro-fine cut on an index finger and you're handling that beef? You know, because we really don't have the you don't like to think of a kitchen being somewhere that you have to wear a damned hazmat suit to feed your family. And most people will pick the raw piece of beef up and throw same on grill or onto smoking white-hot iron skillet. You know, we call it hillbilly Teflon. And boom! It don't feel so good. Well, we don't understand where could you have come in contact? Oh, wait. Pot roast. Pot roast! You know, this is a meat-eating nation. Founded on the part of our national mythology is the cattle drive. And restaurants that serve porterhouse steaks as big as a Volkswagen Beetle. And that is literally, our national myth is in a shambles too. Make sure you thoroughly wash and cook lettuce to 180 degrees Fahrenheit. What? Well, okay, dip it in Purell then if you must. Oh! Fact of the matter is, because of corporate greed, and there's no other word for it than greed, we don't have a decent inspection system anymore. And as a consequence of that, every so often a story comes out. Maybe it's about the beef being laden with Staphylococcus aureus. Or maybe it's the E. coli 157H7 that is a direct byproduct of contact with fecal material in your peanut butter. And you still have to ask the question, gee, how did poop come near my peanut butter? You got poop on my peanut butter. No, you got peanut butter on my poop. Two great tastes that taste great together. No. Well, it got there because somebody at ConAgra or Monsanto or God knows what didn't get a big enough bonus last year. And so we'll cut a few more corners. And who cares if little Johnny dies of a medication-resistant staph infection in a hospital? Because the CEO just got the new Maserati. Right? Yeah. So there we find ourselves. More stories, by the way. More stories coming up. But you know, the phone lines are open, too, and I'm pretty sure the phones are working. Let me see. Yep, that's definitely a dial tone. If you want to get involved with the program this Moran Monday, you know how to do it. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And that's not what I want. Dadgummit. Rat fart. Well, that's what we're going to get. If I find the other one, I'll bring it up after. You can never go wrong with Steely Dan anyway, right? We'll be back.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
There he is, over there.
Back with that squirrel behind the rock that the hippy-dippy painter was painted. 6 minutes past the hour on what has apparently going to be a filibobster Moran Monday. You know, every time I say the word Maserati, I think of that song by Joe Walsh, Life's Been Good. My Maserati does 185. I lost my license. No, I don't drive. Just to sort of continue on the theme of, well, Moran Monday, we've got a few more Morans . Who am I kidding? They really are. They're all over the place. Among other places, the Morans are out in force in, how about Alaska? Alaska has lots of, to the extent they have lots of anything, as far as people are concerned. Let's just say there is a strong anti-abortion movement up there. There are also normal people. We should remember that when we think about Alaska. They've got a repig licking by the name of State Senator Fred Dyson. He's from Eagle River. And he rose to address the question in a floor debate about a 14-year-old program called Denali Kid Care. You know, the sundry states have given various names to their individual CHIP programs. Denali Kid Care has been a part of Alaska's social fabric for 14 years. Its purpose is ensuring that children and teens of working and non-working families can get access to health care that they need. Simple. And there are those in the Alaska legislature who want to return the funding levels or the funding qualification levels from 175% of the poverty level to 200% of the federal poverty level where it started. That would add 1,300 more children and about 250 pregnant women to the rolls of Denali Kid Care. Enter Senator Fred Dyson. Who wants to kill Denali Kid Care because of an Alaska Supreme Court ruling. Like other states, this being one of them, the state where I am, West Virginia, Alaska's Supreme Court has ruled that if other medically necessary procedures are covered, then medically necessary abortions must also be covered. The bill died or was stalled in committee by a 10-10 vote that included the no vote of Senator Fred Dyson, who cited his good conscience. He said he couldn't vote for a bill that would help some but also result in abortions. Then there's Senator Kevin Meyer, a repig-licking from Anchorage. He said, I think there are just a lot of unknowns about what is medically necessary, what is considered an abortion. Now, bill sponsor, Betty Davis, a Democrat, said that the language of the bill could be deemed to perhaps, maybe, sorta, not sure, theoretically, fund 22 abortions. So over those 22 abortions, these right-wing thugs stopped coverage, access to life-saving health care for over 1,000 children and women in Alaska. Prenatal care for women who aren't getting abortions. How does a Republican like Senator Fred Dyson or Senator Kevin Meyer not simply have their head just go, you know, like the Martians inside their little glass helmets in Mars Attacks? Just pop. They cut off funding for 1,000 children and women and pregnant women over 22 hypothetical abortions. This doesn't even, you can't even file this under cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's that hateful. It is the mother who goes into labor preterm and will miscarry without badly needed medication and cannot get it because Kevin Meyer and Fred Dyson and seven other Republicans and one Democrat in the Alaska Senate are wedding themselves over 22 theoretical abortions. Jesus God! I mean, you can almost hear the music, can't you? And the little repeat, but their heads don't pop. Because see, this isn't cognitive dissonance inside a Republican's head, because in order for cognitive dissonance to exist and be noticeable, you have to have a conscience. You have to have some mechanism by which your mind can conceive that it is at odds with itself. And a Republican, especially a pro-life Republican, can't do that. Because it's all lizard brain. The higher functionings of reason and conscience and morality and ethics are not at all developed inside the Republican lizard brain. So consequently, Fred Dyson and Kevin Meyer can go whistling out of their Alaska Senate committee chambers convinced that they done struck a blow for freedom for the unborn. When they are directly and proximately responsible for miscarriages, misery, and even death. but they done it. I just get all teary-eyed as a man when I think about all them fetuses, the ones that might cure cancer if they was white. I get all wrought. Then I start thinking about Jeebus. And I know that he'd want me to make sure that that woman miscarries in case there would be a theoretical imaginary abortion out there somewhere. Even the imaginary abortions is murder. It's all over the place. They don't give a good tinker's damn about babies or fetuses or women or anything else. Republicans care about tearing this nation to pieces and rebuilding it along some sort of Frankensteinian nightmarish model lines of something cooked up in the crazed brain of Ayn Rand, in which selfishness, according to her so-called philosophy, is a virtue. She really said that. That selfishness is a virtue, that altruism was evil, and she condemned Christianity, and I can never quite understand. Again, it's one of those moments where, you know, the normal brain would splot inside the space helmet. But a repiglican brain can go to, well, lizard brain, I mean, but I guess it's still a brain. It can go to church on Sunday and pray to Jeebus and feel all saved and have a personal relationship with the Lord Jeebus Christ. And then say, that Ayn Rand, my goodness gracious, she was the greatest philosopher of our age. When she thought Christianity was a chump religion because it preached, at least some of the time, by some of its practitioners, unrestrained love and compassion for the suffering among us. This is the world they want to take us to, in which they talk about the culture of life. Talk about the culture of life, and then talk about tearing apart everything in the government of we the people that supports it, and they want to tear it to shreds. David in Tennessee noting, nope, not them boys. For a feller to have him some cognitive dissonance, that old boy needs to be able to cognate. Up there, ain't going to be a whole bunch of cognating going on. Bingo, toaster. Let us go to the phones. Okay, not that one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Staphylococcus, it's what's for dinner.
Yes, it is, Reverbo.
You got a whole week of broadcasting ahead of you. Do you think you can do better than that? Knocked it out of the park with that one.
Well, it only works if you've got that whole Sam Waterston of Staphylococcus, it's what's for dinner.
And you've got that Aaron Copland soundtrack going on, which is you can just see it. Somebody says from pen to grill to plate to hospital room in under 20 minutes.
Yeah, wait a minute. I think I may have it here. Hold on. Let's do this right.
You got the music?
Wait a sec. I'll come in a minute here. This sounds like too much. Oh, wait a minute. This one. Yeah, it'll be here in a second. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did a pretty credible version of this, too. It's called Hoedown. You can just see the
American, inspiring piece, very American-sounding piece. I do like.
Oh yeah, and I used to confuse this with the. There it is. There's nothing like the sizzling smell of Staphylococcus aureus infused beef, a grilling on your outside barbecue. And so what if you had a cut on your finger when you laid it on there and the little critters are crawling around in your bloodstream even as you speak? Don't complain, citizen. That would be un-American. Staphylococcus aureus. It's what's for dinner.
Oh, bingo. Perfect. And really, why are we not hearing that commercial? Anymore, you just sort of have to wonder. There's nothing covert about any of this anymore. It's just so it's just so out in the open. Why not just cut that commercial and play it?
Yeah, and you know, I love the imagery that you guys pull together. Whether it's that beautiful little photoshopped thing on the header of your latest there at the headonradionetwork.com website, Cavalcade of Crazy. That photo of you and Ross Perot at the controls of the Silver Pelican.
Mm-hmm.
Or the image that just rolled into the email box from David in Tennessee that just about made me spit take the monitor. Can't you just see Sam Waterston riding into frame on a big-ass single-cell staphylo what's it?
Oh, God.
Hit him up! Get him up! Get along, little staff!
It's the invisible hand of the free market. It's just, yes, with every cut, with every porterhouse you buy, you get that those hazmat gloves, and that's just, hey, what isn't normal about that?
if you want to, for instance, every year they have a chili cook-off over in Beckley, Reverbo, and we participated a couple of times. And in order to do it, you have to go and take your little food handler's card test over to the Raleigh County Health Department. Because, you know, you're going to be serving food to the public. And I got no beef with that. See, beef. Because my chili's tofu. No, it makes sense. You know, you're putting food out there for just all comers to eat. It would be better if you understood how not to make them sicker than hell in the process. But we're getting to the point where you're going to have to have all of that and the hair nets and the gloves and the hazmat suit, you know, just to pull the goddamn Hungry Man TV dinner out of the oven every night. And that's just wrong.
It does seem wrong, doesn't it?
Home cooking with mama, you know, with mama's own latex gloves. Then again, maybe this'll spark an economic upturn via a whole new home food safety industry. I mean, remember when Tom Ridge told us to all go put plastic sheeting on our windows, and we had that color coded right, yeah. That was great for the plastic sheeting industry. Got to where you couldn't get any. Oh, by the way, we've been screwing up our Sams. Ron and Raleigh said, hey, Bob, wrong Sam. It's Sam Elliott. Yeah.
Oh, Sam Elliott. And I just
got... Yeah, with the mustache just a-flowing in the wind as he's riding the prairie on his single-cell staphylo... What's it?
Maybe riding through the corridors of your arteries and veins on that thing.
Yeah. Yeehaw! Fill your hands, you son of a staff!
I just had a sudden a geographic thought here. Don't the folks south of the Possum Line call that stuff Bisqueen?
Which stuff?
You know, that polyethylene, that Saran wrap, that stuff that you're talking about that goes on the... you were just talking about making the plastic coating industry a bunch of money.
They may. I can't admit I've ever heard that south of the Possum Line, but it's entirely possible. Possum Line's the long line, Reverbo.
It is, and it's not just, you know, it could be, yeah, it is a Possum Line in Maine. You know, it moves. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think that word Bisqueen came to mind, but somebody listening, they know that. The reason I called was because of a certain word you used that really resonated with me, the world lover that I am. And it was the word evade. And I thought, Jesus, God, this is the one we got to use. And we got to just use this as often as possible. The corporations, of course, evading paying taxes. And the point is, that's exactly what they are doing. We're not looking for loopholes. We're not neglecting to pay them. We're evading them. I mean, and that's really the word that's going to piss. That's the word you want.
Yeah, when all your business is in the United States, but your home office is a P.O. box in Zug, Switzerland, you're evading.
Right, and plus it's got that great connotation of, you know it's wrong. This isn't, whoops, I forgot to turn on the, I forgot to sign the tax form. You know,
well, you know, back when I was having a cup of coffee in law school up on Tort Flats in Morgantown, the tax professor went to great lengths to explain tax evasion is a crime, tax avoidance is accounting. And he was teaching tax avoidance.
But now, like I said, I'll go back to this whole concept now that I think all this shit is out in the open now. I don't think there's any pretense.
To go back to Hunter S. Thompson, who I mentioned earlier in the show, you know, he used to say that the hogs are in the tunnel and they travel on a road of bones. Well, the hogs are out of the tunnel now. I don't think Hunter Thompson would flinch for a minute were he still among us to say that they're out of the tunnel and the road is still made of bones.
That connects the dots to Hedges too. I mean, it has fallen apart. And people are either too, well, the thing about Hedges, the thing that worries me is it kind of brings me back to the 60s and how what a large component of, I think that brought some pressure to bear against, to stop the Vietnam War is kind of what you need now. And that is, you need the people who don't care. It doesn't matter to them. There are people right now who don't even notice things have gone to hell. They don't know or care we're in a depression. And those are the people who we've got to get to. It doesn't matter how many people like me get out in the street and yell. And that's how the Vietnam War, when rich people's kids got drafted, when senators' sons got drafted, then the war started coming to a close.
Yeah. You know, this weekend
they're tapped out now. They're so tapped out. I don't know if they got the energy to do this.
Well, and again, you know, with my cheap little analysis pointing over toward you know the sex scenes with Robert Pattinson were just, well, I don't know how we got this rating. You know, how are you going to get through to Emery and Eileen when that's what's in their face? You know, I've got a story here about the power shift. You know, that's been going on in D.C. I think tomorrow's the last day or something. As Susan mentioned, they went and shut down some BP gas stations with flash mobs. And, you know, you and I could probably go back and forth, Reverbo, on whether or not that's a good tactic. That's just some schlub with a green smock on getting, you know, maybe $8 an hour. You know, so maybe he just didn't have to work for a few hours. But, you know, I have a real problem with taking it out on working people. But still, you know, they did this. And there was a powerful, powerful address by Van Jones. you know, the guy who was attacked as, you know, a communist. By, well, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, you have to be wise enough to hold both parties to high standards. And remember, he's saying this to a bunch of anywhere from 14 to 24-year-olds. And he said, but he also told them directly that when we talk about clean energy and things like that, it has to, America has to learn to see it as something besides hippie power. But the real guts of it, and the thing that I think you'll hang your hat on, Reverbo, is he described our civilization as one that is, and these are his words, fueled by death. He said, we pull out of the ground death. We burn death in our power plants. Why do we get shocked when we get death in our sky as global warming, death in our oceans as oil spills, death in our children's lungs as asthma and cancer? Because every fossil fuel is a fossil fuel because it is literally a fuel that developed from death. And that's, you know, that's a powerful image. And he went on to say the stereotype is that solar power is just hippie power, but it's also cowboy power, farmer power, rancher power, and Appalachian mountain power.
Well, and it's life power. And that goes back to Hedges calling unfettered capitalism essentially a system of death.
Bingo.
There's another word that's got to get used more. And I think that, I don't know, there are too many people who are scared of using it. People are dying, folks. And they're not just people dying because we're dropping bombs on them. I mean, I don't, talking about cognitive dissonance, I've never quite understood how it just, the genius it takes to be okay with, we want to keep everyone here in the United States secure from, you know, death from outside so that they're secure so that we can drop death on them from the inside.
Yeah.
I don't know how to, you know, I don't know.
You know,
we take
real umbrage at outsiders killing our people. But when American corporations or transnational corporations want to do it, you know what? We need to make the tax code more fair for them.
We need to keep us all safe for that, sure.
Absolutely. But there's this strand, you know, there's a reason this is Moran Monday, Reverbo. There's this strand of absolute lunacy that runs along through the right wing and the cognitive dissonance and everything. Now, I just shared a couple of clips a couple of quotes from Van Jones with you. You know, we tend to think, oh, look, Glenn Beck is leaving Fox. Well, he's not gone. That crazy little bastard is still scurrying around on the kitchen floor in the dark. Little roach. So, now here, this is, you know, it's another clip moment, okay? This is a clip of Van Jones addressing Power Shift. All right?
You have the opportunity to say to Uncle Joe, excuse me, sir, don't you believe in liberty? Don't you believe in liberty? And if you do, how can you live in a country where every American is forced to be an energy consumer for the rest of our lives? Shouldn't we have the right as Americans to be energy producers? Shouldn't we be able to put up solar panels on our own houses? Shouldn't we be able to put up wind turbines in our backyard? Shouldn't we be able, as Americans, to power our own communities? Shouldn't we be able? Shouldn't we have the right and the liberty to be energy producers and not be dictated to 12 times a year by energy companies that dictate how much we're going to pay for energy, when we're going to pay it, how many asthma inhalers we're going to have as a consequence? Shouldn't we have the liberty as Americans to power this country in a new way?
Any problems?
There's some people out there with some strong words. And then, I mean, the other side just is singing that old Tennessee Ernie Ford song, you know, no, they owe their souls to the company store.
Yeah, that's how we've always done it. That's how we'll always do it forever. So,
yeah, it pisses me off. As if tree hugging is a bad thing. As if all this stuff is a bad thing. that conservation is a bad thing. So we've had that discussion too, how they've twisted all of that into, if you're not for death, then somehow the death equals patriotism, and that equals jobs, and that equals freedom. And peace equals cowardice, right? And peace equals anti-American. It does. You just want to fucking scream.
You do. Okay. You want to scream? I got screaming. I got another 54 seconds for you, Reverbo. Because you heard Van Jones reference your uncle Joe.
Yeah.
Because he said, what he says in that quote is, tell your Uncle Joe, who watches Fox News, blah blah blah. That's the clip. So this just drove Glenn Beck to distraction. And like I said, he's going away, but he damn sure is not gone. Check this out.
Well, Jones is in the news again. He was at the Power Shift conference this weekend, but nobody seems to want to cover it. They are telling our kids. You have major leaders now telling our children not to listen to their parents, to teach the parents. And you have show the picture of the president and his cabinet room. The Roosevelt room. This room is right across the hallway through the door, right behind the president. Right here is the Oval Office. This is where the cabinet meets or doesn't meet, as it is in the case with the president of the United States currently. The more things change, you see, the more they stay the same. These radicals are the same radicals that used to tell each other in the 1960s, don't trust anybody over 30. Don't trust your parents. Bill Ayer said, kill the parents. Kill your parents.
Did you hear kill your parents anywhere in that Van Jones clip?
No, I didn't. That man is a certified and deranged reactionary. And how come we don't arrest him under the Terrorism Act?
But, you know, as a geezer, I mean, I'm a geezer. I admit, I'm a geezer. I can't stand probably north of 50% of the bubblegum pop that my kids listen to. Can't understand a word they're saying. I'm a geezer. But I also like to think I struggle to be a fairly enlightened geezer.
Sure.
And toward that end, I think kids have a right to say, look, you're poisoning what, you know, you're going to die one of these days, and this is what we get. And we got to have this conversation before you go. Are you going to hand us death and destruction, or are you going to hand us warmth and life? Because, see, where coal, oil, and gas are all death, sun and wind are literally life itself. They are the things that promote and make possible the existence of life. But I guess Glenn Beck is so hidebound, and Repiglicans are so hidebound, Reverbo, that they literally cannot conceive of a world that is not run on poison.
Well, like we've said, they simply look at the world. Half the world is an inventory warehouse, and the other half is a dump. This seems so obvious. It's like when Sandra you can see her just scratching her head going, I don't even understand why we're having this discussion. All this seems so clear. Even to the chumps, you would think it was clear, because chumps have little kids, and chumps see the sparkle in their eyes, and chumps don't want their kids to grow up sick. Why have we let this come this far, really, is what it is. I heard, real quick, to get back to this word evade, which I love so much. I don't know what show I was listening to, but somebody was on there talking about the Big Branch, other Big Branch disaster. And whoever this was talking about the results of a study they did, and that they concluded without a doubt. I guess what happened at the other Big Branch mine wasn't just like Carter 5 had a fire in it. What happened was that the mine blew up.
Yes.
And they said when mines blow up, there is only one reason this ever happens, and that is because there is just too much damn coal dust floating around. And the only reason that ever happens is because people are evading their obligations to say to the worker safety. And that's all there is to it. And all those people should be in jail. It wasn't a couple of
mass. And see, that's taxes. And that's why it's so frustrating, Reverbo, that a pig, well, being rough on the pigs, a vermin like Don Blankenship is walking around free, because this man authored memos. This man authored memos saying we are focusing, and he did it before another Massey disaster, the Arakoma fire, when more people died, which was right after the ICG disaster up in the central part of the state. But he authored a memo saying, if you're not running coal, you're not doing the coal business. We are in the business of producing coal, not working on worker safety. If you're not running coal, you're not working. Now, am I just wandering around out in the pasture? I mean, what is the meaning of something like that? That to me means don't work on safety issues, don't pay attention to safety issues, run coal, run death.
You just don't neglect to turn on the ventilators. That almost kind of, you're kind of almost fishing for sympathy there. I'm back to this word evade, and there ain't no sympathy there. You evaded. I mean,
but there will never. I know I'm careful about that word, but I feel safe in saying this. No grand jury will ever sit down and even be asked to consider the possible criminal culpability of Don Blankenship.
Why?
Because he's Don Blankenship.
He's a putz.
He's a murderer.
He's been the shortest trial in history. You mentioned before how there's a danger to becoming obsessed with the bigger pictures, which thereby retard the success in the small areas over which you have any control. I'm paraphrasing what you said. But honestly, it's hard to not consider that all of this is the big picture. And if money didn't influence, I mean, you're not evading anything if you successfully lobbied to repeal the law. You're not evading anything if you bought off judges and, you know, bought legislation to enable your criminal conduct, because it isn't criminal anymore. So it's, the big picture is the only picture, really. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. But the thing is, I guess it's like Where's Waldo. You know, you find one little corner you can focus on. Everybody doesn't have to work on stopping mountaintop removal and the poisoning of Appalachian communities, because there's plenty for everybody to do. But the point is, and we are all guilty of it, the point is the problem, Reverbo, is our failure to see everything as part of that big picture. Does it make any sense? In other words, we get myopic about our issues.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to tell people to neglect, you know, the problems right in their own community. That's not what I'm trying to say. I think about it, when you think about every piece of decent social and economic legislation that helped out working people, all this bubbled up from the very, very, very bottom, from some local issue. None of it trickled down from the top ever.
Never, ever.
I guess, that's just sort of answer.
You know, when the Johnson administration started the war on poverty, it didn't start the war on poverty because one day LBJ got up, held his basset hound up by the ears for a while and then put it down and said, by gum, I'm going to work on poverty in Appalachia.
A scene I'd like to see, but no, you're right. He didn't do it.
Unavoidable. Reports were brought to him of the hell that people were living in.
And his response at the top was to say, let's try to do something about it. The response of the Repiglicans, of course, was, let's try to do something about LBJ trying to do something about it.
Of course. I mean, I understand that when mountaintop removal is eventually comes stopped, you can trace it all the way back to your friend, that woman that got punched that day. I mean, I get that. I just hope it doesn't eventually stop just because that vein ran out of coal.
Well, or we ran out of mountains.
Yeah, I mean, anyhow, that's about all I have for this evening.
Well, you did plenty with the latest installment of Cavalcade. I hope everybody goes and reads it. Comment if you like, or not. Just, if nothing else, spread it around. Because you really did something, Reverbo. You've put, you know, you've got this playful little concept. But inside that concept is some really, really serious reality. And it bears stewing over and cogitating on. And I hope people will. I
try to be totally different from anyone else you might read out there. And whether it resonates with you or anyone or not, only way to find out is to check out a few paragraphs and see if it's entertaining. I mean, sometimes I worry that my sidekick, Mr. Perot, might actually be part of the problem, but I don't care. He's too much fun.
Well, and you know, he, since he's all mystical and just appeared out of nowhere in your airship, you can make him say anything you want to say. Now, oddly enough, what he's saying is stuff that he was saying how many years ago?
19 now.
You know.
Oh, he was right on.
You know, when the chapter of American history is written for that period forward, with all the NAFTA and SHAFTA and BAFTA and CAFTA and LAFTA, the name of the chapter is going to be That Great Big Sucking Sound.
He called it. He called it all the way.
You know,
there were a lot of people that were not laughing at him either, about 19 million people. And if things not gone strange for him, who knows what might have happened.
You know what? I think between, bless his heart, Dennis Kucinich and Ross Perot, we can draw a pretty clear, bright line political lesson. Do not bring extraterrestrial life into the discussion of your candidacy.
I agree. Although it would work for me.
Well, me too. But you know what? It's not going to work for Emery and Eileen.
No, it won't.
Because they're looking for reasons to turn off and tune out.
Yeah.
They're looking for reasons to go over to Nick at Night and find that latest I Dream of Jeannie rerun.
Yeah.
And apparently the cutoff is aliens.
What did Kucinich, what's his reference to the spaceships? I don't remember.
The fact that he said that he was at a party at Warren Beatty's sister. Come on.
Shirley MacLaine?
Yeah. Yeah. He was at a party at Shirley MacLaine's and stepped out onto the balcony and saw a UFO one night. And that was enough to get him branded a non-serious candidate. Now, meanwhile, Donald Trump and the wombat on his head are running around talking about Barack Obama's grandmother.
Right.
In very poor grammar, I might add.
That was priceless.
And he's being interviewed in long form by people like Meredith Vieira. And it's beginning to scare. It is beginning to scare the old guard Republicans water boweled. You know, when Karl Rove comes out and says Donald Trump is a loon, and he uses the platform of Fox News to do it, you know, there's trouble in paradise.
Really, we can almost blame all of this I mean, I know the money's a big deal, but you can almost blame all of it equally on Fox. Because before all this, people like that were just out on the fringes where they belong. That was their natural environment, was on the fringe.
Yeah, it's like David in Tennessee has noted. There was a time when these loons had to get their hands all purple with the Ditto machine. And they had to physically hand their little runoffs to their weird little friends and allies behind closed doors. Well, now it's out in the open, and it is one of the political norms. What Krugman was talking about in his column. You know, we're not even, you know, Democrats and Republicans aren't just arguing from different philosophies. They're arguing from different planets.
It's the truth.
And you got a real problem when that happens. Because if the Repiglicans from planet Zulop 12 get their way, well, they're gonna keep living in their fantasy world, but the reality that we're gonna get handed is gonna suck. As if it doesn't suck already. I mean, it's gonna be a reality that's so far past suck, Reverbo, that the light from suck won't reach it for a million years.
Another line I was always low.
And you know,
it's already sucking, and we need people who don't notice it and don't care to start caring. I mean, do you not agree?
Yeah, and that's the central problem. How do you get from Chris Hedges in Union Square to Bubba and Marvelline in their Lazy Boys?
I live in Baltimore County, and Maryland is Baltimore, Washington. No, everywhere around here is connected to the. Anyway, what I want to say is there is a lot of money around here. You can just drive within 20 miles of my house out into the country, and there are people with a lot of big houses and a lot of property. I mean, there's no shortage of dough in the state of Maryland, and I don't know how this is going to go. I'm just very pessimistic. The little people are tapped out, and the rest of them, I don't know what they must think. They don't give a shit that gas is $4 a gallon. I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know what is the off ramp on this? Did he have a useful answer to that, or was he?
That was the frustrating part. No. You know, he said. I said, you know, what does it look like when it comes apart? And he said, well, you're seeing it now. Well, great, okay. And you know, bless his heart, today, on April 15th, he said, you know, it begins with a painful course of civil disobedience. All right, well, there's 21 kids sitting in jail in D.C. right now because they occupied the offices of the Department of Interior today. And in my email, Reverbo, I just got a solicitation to donate for their bail. And I got to tell you, that pisses me off a little bit. Not that I'm being asked to donate. $5, $10, what have I got? Yeah. But this is the stuff you do before the arrests, so that they hand the $100 over and it's catch and release and bye-bye.
Yeah.
So, you know, sure, let's call for civil disobedience, but let's have everything in place for it. You know, Martin Luther King didn't write the letter from Birmingham jail because he couldn't get the bail money. He meant to be in Birmingham jail. Because a letter from McDonald's, letter from the colored section of McDonald's, just doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it don't. Well, and if the teabaggers, for what they're worth, are going to get bust to their event on the
Well, the very damn thing happened this weekend in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
they had him a teabagging rally.
Right, but if they're going to do that on because Joe Kors paid the chartered the buses, then we got to get bussed to our events. I mean,
right. But the funny thing about Wisconsin, and the for-profit media is that, well, no one can really. Now, the crowd was so loud that it drowned out the right-wing freaks with boos.
No doubt.
And yet nobody there in a position of authority could say how many of them were teabaggers versus how many of them were people who opposed the teabaggers. And apparently it got the discussions got rather heated along the margins of the thing.
But what's no problem, numbers that are no problem to ascertain at any other rally seem to give them difficulty at this one. Just
yeah.
How much longer, you know, it's almost like can you pull the wool over people's eyes like this? And, yeah, okay, all right.
But remember, you can't cheat an honest man, Commandment 1. You can pull the wool over the eyes, but you know what? Some people want it pulled and will help in the process, Reverbo.
Yeah.
Just worth remembering. Well, brother, I got to get out of here.
All right. Well, good talking to you, and I certainly enjoyed your clip from Mock the Dummy. That was wonderful.
Wasn't it?
Great. Yeah. Where did he? Trump went to college where again?
Wharton.
Real well. Bush went to Yale, so I mean.
Yeah, I know, but I think. I think the one dummy was right. We need to see the GMAT scores for the Wharton admission.
Oof. God, that guy's a freak.
Yeah, not a certificate of live matriculation either.
All right, man.
Reverbo, have a good night.
Make it personal, Bob.
You too, brother. Thanks.
Right,
bye now.
See ya.
Reverbo, author of A Cavalcade of Crazy. Go read it at headonradionetwork.com. Well, it was a filibobster for 2 hours, and then all the lights lit up. And I got 5 blinking lights right now, and I'm sorry, and we're out of time. So let's have at this tomorrow, shall we? Do please. It is time for Rick Smith, live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen every time it does happen, from our chat room moderator Lottie to our news ninjas Gene and Susan to our blogger Texas Betsy, who is off with her bag of curses to scare the daylights out of children during Passover this week, apparently. I don't know. But a happy Passover week to you all who celebrate it. Thanks go out, as ever, to John Fox and to Ben Birch. Between the two of them, everything technical that has to happen to make this show happen, happens. And again, thanks to Reverbo. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.